Welcome to Shapeshifters and Creative Disturbance, the podcast about transdisciplinary intelligence and how collaboration and expertise in more than one domain of knowledge can allow you to become a hybrid or amphibian in the world. I'm Alex Garcia-Topete, PhD researcher at the RSI Lab of the University of Texas at Dallas, and your host of this podcast. In this episode, we'll talk with our guest, Dr. Brian Black, fellow researcher at this university, about the emerging intersection of neuroscience and engineering, and how crossing that boundary is opening new opportunities to treating neural injuries and conditions. But before we jump into the interview, what is transdisciplinary intelligence? Simply put, it's a set of skills, knowledge, and attitudes that allows experts of all kinds, such as scientists, artists, engineers, designers, humanists, entrepreneurs, and educators, to work on complex issues of our world beyond the boundaries of their domain, either by collaborating or by becoming hybrids and amphibians who thrive in more than one professional environment. You can think of it this way. Transdisciplinary intelligence is like learning a second language, or two or three, so that you can go across borders, broaden your worldview, and get along with others whose cultures, thinking, and ways of seeing the world are different from your own. And that's what this podcast is all about. Now let's go to our interview with Dr. Brian Black. I'm here with Dr. Brian Black of the
Neuronal Networks and Interfaces Lab here in the Department of Biomedical Engineering.
Also at UT Dallas. Thank you so much for joining for a chat about what we're doing.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more about that mouthful of words that your lab is.
Sure. So Neuronal Networks and Interfaces Lab, what we do is use novel materials and novel approaches of neural interfaces to record activity from the brain, to record activity from dissociated cells, in an effort to understand what causes excitability and network level changes in the brain and elsewhere.
Excellent. So yeah, there are these like plates and nails that you put into the brain to catch signals.
And in some cases, yes, these are implantable devices. These are penetrating devices. So specifically the one I think that we were looking at last time that Alex has now just described as a bed of nails is a so-called Utah electrode array. It's made of a number of single shank electrodes that, look like you should be able to lay on it or walk across it, and people then will throw money at you, right? So these are very small devices, however, and these we implant them in the motor cortex both to evaluate their chronic performance and to do some neural decoding for task-related behaviors.
Right. So these are devices that help or are in the process of exploring and helping with artificial limbs and other fixes for neural disorders, correct?
Sure, that's the end goal of all this kind of research. What our lab is focused on is improving the long-term functionality of these devices. So right now, you implant one of these electrode arrays, it can fail for a number of reasons. It can fail mechanically, the wires can break, it can fail electrically, meaning the conductive or insulating substrate can be damaged. And it can fail due to foreign body response. So that's your own body. It's your own body's immunological response trying to attack this strange thing that's now inside of it. So all of these things make these devices last, at least in humans, somewhere between 6 months and 6 years, which is just not good enough. You don't want to have invasive brain surgery once every couple of years. You want these things to be able to last for 10, 20, 30 years. The lifetime of the patient would be fantastic, right? So how do we make these more reliable? And so we use a number of materials to either make them resilient to the foreign body response or to evade it completely. In other words, make it invisible to the foreign body response. So that can be softening materials, so that there's no mechanical mismatch between the device and the brain. Or in the case of resiliency, it can be some very corrosion resistant materials, such as amorphous silicon carbide, which is being fabricated or worked with down the hall by Stuart Kogan.
basically either don't see me or come get me. You can't touch me.
Yeah, bring it. Bring whatever you've got. It doesn't matter. But even that approach, you know, is probably not a good long-term solution in and of itself. You really want a combination of the two, because, you know, the come and get me approach, if that was all there was to it, the foreign body response would still occur. And part of the foreign body response is the triggered death of local neurons. So then you don't have anything to record from.
Right.
So really you want a combination of those two approaches. And that's Excellent. What we're working towards.
So you approached our lab a few months ago in order to see if there could be a collaboration. And we've been talking and starting the collaboration. What attracted you to reach out to the ArtSci lab?
Well, I think that there's a pretty natural intersection between art and technology and science. You know, we're all interested in answering questions in novel ways and exploring either, again, technology, science, or the human experience in different ways. So this is something that I had really, it's a project that, you know, that you guys are working on that was very similar to something I tried to start as a graduate student, failed tremendously. I tried to work with the art department to get students involved, and they could never understand that I wasn't just trying to get somebody to draw pictures for our publications. But I really wanted to interact with the art department and get some outside perspectives mm-hmm. on the work that we were doing and see if you looked at it from a different viewpoint, if you got different solutions. So that's my interest in it.
Excellent. Yeah, that's definitely the mission and objective right. of the ArtSci lab. And actually, let's talk a little bit more about who you collaborate with and the makeup of your lab. You have how many students?
We're actually a very small lab. So so we have 5 graduate students mm-hmm. as of last week, and probably a similar number of undergraduate students, maybe 7 undergraduates. Mm-hmm. So we're a relatively small lab, but we are comprised of people from electrical engineering backgrounds. My background is in physics. Mm-hmm. Joe, the PI of the lab, his background is in electrical engineering and neuroscience. We have people from biology, mm-hmm. pure biology, and we have people from bioengineering. We collaborate with other people in this hallway and in this massive building that we're in, both from biological sciences, chemistry. We have people who are essentially material scientists down the hall. We're working with novel materials, and somebody next door who is a physiologist in the sense that really studies molecular pathways of tissue material interaction.
So yeah, so that's the material that you're working with, the environment that you're supposed to work with right. the devices. Do you share equipment with some of these?
We do. Yeah.
Collaborative intensive lab that it's not just one bubble, but having
sure.
to.
I'm looking at your hat there on the chair, and you got to wear a lot of different ones as you move up and down the hallway. Something we had spoken about last time we were together is, you know, the different languages that everybody speaks. And you've got to be real careful that what you're saying is not being misinterpreted. You know, you got to be very clear and not use a lot of jargon that is subfield specific. So, it's a diverse group of people from diverse backgrounds. I think that we've made tremendous strides, and no one can see the board that I'm pointing at, but there's a lot of papers and grants on there. We're a very productive group of labs, and I think it's at least partially owed to the diverse backgrounds of the people.
According to the research, that is a lot of the success rate comes from diversity. And yeah, and also sharing practices. Sure. After visiting your lab for the first time, looking at this board, that just for the listeners, it's a comprehensive list of collaborations, papers, grants, funding opportunities that need to be dealt with according to deadlines. And some of them have check marks and slashes across them, and others are pending.
Some of them don't have check marks. But these are all collaborative grants that we're working on. With those in the department and elsewhere, ranging from the molecular mechanisms of pain to post-amputation neuroma formation to multi-scale modeling of foreign body response. So there, it's everything from, for those who are, you know, acclimated and initiated, it's everything from NSF to NIH and beyond. So that's a lot of projects going on.
The big bucks.
Yeah.
And I was going to say is that after seeing this, Roger Molina and Ivantina and myself went back to the lab and started a board like this, because like, okay, oh, this is one of the pieces of organization and successful collaboration that we're missing. Of we kind of have a we had a mental image or mental map of grant opportunities or deadlines to be,
right,
you know, met. But now I was the person that went up to one of our 7 boards in the lab,
yeah,
and wrote, okay, deadlines for grants, publications, like, conferences, other events, whatever where we can, you know, contact people and put information or output in front of eyes.
Right. So, there's nothing like being faced with it every day.
Yeah.
Right. When you know, you know, you can have an abstraction in your mind about, okay, in 6 months I have to have this grant.
Yeah.
But then you walk in and every single day you're just like, okay, don't forget that one. Don't forget that one. Don't forget that. Oh, 3 months just went by. I really can't forget that one. You know, there's a certain amount of urgency that it adds to it. And certainly when I meet with Joe or anybody else who's in a, you know, more supervisory role than myself, they're like, okay, what about that one? Yeah. What about that one? What about that one? So, you know, make sure you don't forget and make sure you have your priorities in line.
And that's from the top-down look of the supervisors of the lab keeping track of what's available, right?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, over here on the left, we've just started with starting to structure things out for 2019, and I've started to write the graduate students' names beside of the individual papers and projects that they'll be responsible for, so that whenever we have a conversation, yeah, they also can't forget, and nor will I forget. So, yeah, I think that that's something that, you know, everyone does in one form or another, but it's great to have a centralized list of, yeah, objectives that you're all working towards.
You know, and I can say that in our lab, after we stole this practice from yours, it has helped with the new people in the lower ranks that usually felt that they are attached to a project but couldn't really see, aside from, oh, go do this task, they couldn't see a bigger picture or an end game,
right,
for it. And now with the big board that everybody sees, that everybody walks in every day and sees what's getting checkmark or what is coming, they know, oh, so I am doing this, that is part of this project that is supposed to end up in this conference. Great. They,
sure,
motivation has gone up.
Yeah, that cannot be stressed enough. That I, you know, I don't know how it translates really in industry, but I'm sure it's similar. With undergraduates in academia, you actually cannot just assign a task and let them, you know, go at it. There's no, I mean, it's just in a vacuum, and there's no urgency. There's no understanding of the larger picture, the publication. And those are the monetized units that we operate in,
yeah,
you know, as academics who are trying to publish papers and get grants. So if we're not working towards one of those things, well, why are we doing it? So,
well, for the love of knowledge, somebody would tell you, but
those people are unemployed, which is...
Or tenured.
fantastic, yes, or tenured.
So with our collaboration, what are some of your goals? And since we're talking about them, goals, ambition, 6 months from now, a year from now, idealistic or realistic?
Right. No, I think it's interesting. I think that we need to get something on the big board. You know, I think that I'd reached out to Roger, and we've been keeping in communication, just because I'm very interested in, as we were discussing before, you know, different perspectives and how they can increase your output, increase your productivity, and the quality of your productivity. But as far as specifics for the collaboration, you know, I think that our involvement in Project Hermes,
yeah,
I think that's a great place to start. I think, you know, in addition to that, we've certainly had a few preliminary conversations about how some of our work might be sort of reinterpreted, either from a data analysis viewpoint or from a performance viewpoint, by students in the Art Sci Lab. So those haven't really taken shape yet, but I would say that my aspirations for the collaboration over the next, you know, year to 2 years would be to formalize a few of those collaborative, mm-hmm, projects, and to move forward on things as wild and adventurous as, I think the term was genetic dramaturgy, things as dramatic as that, all the way down to the more nitty-gritty of, okay, if we if we were to talk to everyone in the department, and this is something that I would hope to be able to facilitate, and get some constructive input regarding their transdisciplinary practices and how it's influenced their research, and really kind of start to devise some metrics for how that informs and encourages their research or advances their research. I think that'd be fun too. So.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, a little bit of background, genetic dramaturgy relates to turning genetics and biological material into theater, which is Ivan Tina's specialty and expertise. And Project Hermes is a project relating to transdisciplinary collaboration and the analysis of transdisciplinary intelligence among work groups focused on research and industry across a broad spectrum of those two areas. Thanks so much for talking with us,
Brian. Thank you. I enjoyed it.